Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I'll be your host, Ron Golden, and I want to remind everyone that the Constitution Hour is brought to you by PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. Now, I was having some conversation in the chat room, and being a little frisky this evening, I read a great joke, and I couldn't wait to ad-lib this joke, so I had to put my own twist on it, but I think it's fitting. The joke was about a gentleman who had gone to Washington, D.C. to visit his congressman. While he was there, the congressman invited him down to the congressional cafeteria for lunch. And as they were sitting there, he was quite impressed that they had a full wait staff in the congressional cafeteria. And he noticed that all the waiters and waitresses were carrying a spoon in their pockets. Well, he couldn't resist, and he stopped the waiter, and he asked him, he said, "Sir, I've noticed that everyone's carrying a spoon in their pocket. What is that about?" He said, "Well, Congress did a study. They hired Arthur Anderson to come in and do a study, an efficiency study of our cafeteria. And they determined that at least once every meal, one member from each party would drop a spoon. So they determined that if we carried a spare spoon in our pocket, it would save 15 staff hours per shift running back and forth to the kitchen getting a new spoon." The guy thought this was fabulous. He said, "Wow, that's incredible. Such efficiency." So as they were eating their meal, sure enough, he dropped his spoon. Well, the waiter was right there with a new spoon, and the meal went on uninterrupted. At the end of the meal, He was drinking some coffee with his congressman, and he noticed the waiter had a string coming out of his zipper. And he inquired about the string, and the waiter stooped down in a low voice, and he said, "You know, most people aren't that observant, but when they did that study, you know, they determined if we tied a string to our Johnson, when we had to go to the bathroom, we could just pull the string without touching it, and then we wouldn't have to wash our hands." And he said, "Wow, that's incredible, but once you've pulled it out of your pants to go to the bathroom, how do you get it back in without touching it?" He looked around and he said, "I don't know about everybody else, but I just used the spoon." And that pretty well sums up. That pretty well sums up government solutions in a nutshell, so to speak. And yeah, it was bad, but I couldn't help it. I had to ad lib it because it fits so well. On a different note, I don't know if anybody has heard the latest on Obama's birth certificate. If you have, feel free to chime in. Certainly you guys can call in. Our call-in number is 646-378-0321. Again, the call-in number is 646-378-0321. It seems that Sheriff Joe's posse has not been deterred by all of the heat from the administration, and they have found some very interesting things, and I wanted to read to you from an article. Bear in mind, there will be another press conference by Sheriff Joe and his cold posse coming at the end of this month. But what I found interesting is that there was a time when birth certificates were on sale in Hawaii. It seems that back in the early 60s, right around the time Mr. Obama was hatched, there was a very common habit of Japanese nationals buying birth certificates. And the term they used for these birth certificates were, unattended birth certificates. That's a polite way of saying, yeah, nobody was there to witness the birth, but we're going to give you a birth certificate anyway so that your kids can claim U.S. citizenship. Evidently, Japan was still reeling from World War II and the cleanup, and Hawaii, being a relatively new state, just being admitted into the slave plantation in 1959, they needed revenue, and one way they got revenue was selling these unattended birth certificates. And this is the very interesting part. And I quote, "Once the birth certificate was filled out and turned into state officials, it automatically generated a small birth announcement in the local newspaper." Now, isn't that interesting? A small birth announcement in the local newspaper, all done, brought to you by the state of Hawaii for your patriotic participation in purchasing a birth certificate for your illegitimate citizen children. Now, the media tries to spin this, okay? And the way that the media tries to spin this is some big, huge conspiracy that Barack Obama and his parents and grandparents were involved in some kind of Manchurian candidate conspiracy from the time of his birth. He was destined to be the president. They knew that. And that's why they did all of this. You got to be an idiot to buy that. Okay? I mean, that's just nonsensical. And that's exactly why the media floats that conspiracy theory. We heard Wolf Blitzer do it with the Donald, Now, the Donald is kind of a boob, and I don't give him much credibility. But nonetheless, the fact remains that the birth certificate issue is not going away. And I don't believe that the birth certificate issue is going to bear any fruit either. The only thing it does is solidify the opinion that many of us already hold, and that is that the guy is illegitimate. He's an illegitimate child. He's an illegitimate president. He's an illegitimate intellectual. He's a fraud. At best, he's a Marxist, and I don't even know if he believes in that philosophy. I personally have the opinion that Obama believes in whatever gets him a leg up on everyone else. And I'm sure they are laughing their tails off every night, sleeping in the White House, living it up on your tax dollars. So I just thought that was an interesting tidbit of news, and it doesn't change my opinion. I thought very early on that this was a legitimate issue. I put a link up there in the chat room for anybody that wants to tune in to that. There is a short video on there as well. I also see today that there's some six-party talks going on with Iran over nuclear program, and Israel has once again issued an ultimatum. So we're in for round 39 of the nuclear scare tactics over Israel and Iran. Now, one thing that I also noticed, and I know you guys all remember with affection, I'm sure, the emergency broadcast system, when they would always interrupt your favorite television program with a useless test to let you know that yet again we had not been attacked by nuclear devices from the Soviet Union. Well, it seems that they're upgrading the emergency broadcast system, and it has now become mandatory that all new cell phones and cell phone type devices like the iPad and others must have the ability for the government to send you emergency message broadcasts. Now, that sounds relatively innocuous on its own, but we know with the government, nothing is relatively innocuous. And you can actually choose of those things blocked so that you don't receive those messages, with one exception: presidential announcements. You will not be able to block them. So anytime the president issues some kind of a proclamation or an announcement, you're going to get notified on your cell phone, iPad, iPhone, what have you. Now, isn't that just lovely? Obama can make an announcement to proselytize you for the election, and you'll get it automatically right on your cell phone, and your tax dollars, of course, will be paying for it. It's just so wonderful. We're all going to don our communist garb, hold hands, and sing Kumbaya. I just can't wait until all the slaves are on the plantation, and they know it. It's absolutely mind-numbing to me, all of these people who run around, these pseudo-intellectuals, as I call them, and they become indoctrinated in this ideology. And I don't understand how this happens. How do people, I guess, perhaps they believed in the fairy tale of the United States, and they saw that the world around them didn't fit the story. It didn't fit. And perhaps they became disillusioned and they didn't want to go against their government. So, you just don't know. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he had a good friend, matter of fact, the best man at his wedding, a West Point graduate, served in the military, did two tours over in Iraq, was a staunch conservative. Notice I said was. He is now a professor teaching history. He is a flaming liberal, a devout Obama supporter, and an anti-war advocate. Now, I don't necessarily have a problem with being an advocate of anti-war. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we haven't had a declared war in decades. What I would say is a legitimate war. And even that was suspect absent the Pearl Harbor event. You know, the one thing that people do when they get in power is they try to gain more power. And that's, I understand why the anarchists believe what they believe. I'm not advocating being an anarchist, but I can certainly understand how they come to the logical conclusion that 95% of the problem in the world today is government derived. Whether it's a monarchy or a democracy or a republic, you have all of these idiots that get into power, and the first thing they want to do is extend their power, extend the reach to more and more individuals, put more and more people under their care and authority. Our Congress, our president, they're no different than all the rest. Daniel, thank you for the link. You just got to wonder, how does this conversion take place? I can fully understand a West Point graduate being enthralled with history. I can understand someone serving two tours in military combat recognizing that war isn't as glorious and wonderful and patriotic as he thought it might be going into it. Because in the end, war is nothing more than human beings killing one another. And there's very seldom a good reason for that to occur. But what I don't understand is how you go from a quote-unquote conservative philosophy to an absolute progressive philosophy. And those progressives that claim to be anti-war, yet they don't mind laying waste and murdering millions of people, especially when it's attached to the eco movement, the planet, save the planet. Oh, man. And then we get that stretch to the end that, just like in The Matrix, the movie The Matrix, where the machines have determined that human beings are nothing more than a parasite on the planet. How do you make that switch? How do you cross that bridge ideologically? How do you do that? I don't understand it. I really don't. I don't. It doesn't compute for me. And maybe that's because I don't have a college education. Maybe if I had graduated high school and went on to college and got a doctorate or a PhD, then I would be able to understand. I'd see the light and I would be a liberal progressive, embracing the Marxist philosophy. And I sent to myself today a picture, because I knew it wouldn't stay up on the website very long, and it was on Prison Planet, you know, that evil website, that crazy Alex Jones guy with the bullhorn. But it really spoke volumes, and it was a guy in a brown shirt uniform with the sunglasses on, with a cop badge. And it says, looks like you've had too much to think today. And that really sat the wrong way with me. But it's true. I have watched several cases come up before the courts where people have been prosecuted not for what they did, not even for what they said publicly, but for what they thought. What they thought, and they shared those thoughts in a computer or with someone else in an email. And I'm going to give you a name, and some of you, most of you, will probably disagree with me. But if you go and read his case, you'll understand. The guy's name is Zacharias Moussaoui, the quote-unquote 20th hijacker on 9/11. What the prosecution was able to establish is that Moussaoui was not a part of Al-Qaeda. He was never a part of Al-Qaeda. He wanted to be a part of them. He wanted to be part of the terrorist attacks. He wanted to very badly. And he thought, he put his thoughts down on his computer. And that's what they hung him with. It's his own words typed in files in his computer. And he refused to defend himself, and he was happy to stand up for what he thought he believed in and scream and yell and point the finger at the United States government. But it was a thought crime. The guy did nothing. He took no actions that were illegal in any way, shape, or form. And yet, he was arrested, tried, convicted, and sentenced to life in prison for thought crimes. Now, I'm not saying that I like Zacharias Moussaoui. I'm not saying that I like his thought process, his ideology, his beliefs, his convictions, or anything else. But if I'm not willing, and if you're not willing, ladies and gentlemen, to defend a man's right to think the most horrid things you can imagine about our government or about his neighbor or about the police department or anything else, if he doesn't have the right to think those things, even think them out loud, then neither do you and I. That's the problem with freedom. We have to defend someone's right to think and say things that we vehemently disagree with, because it's their right. Just as it's our right to think and say things that others vehemently disagree with. Is there a line that should not be crossed? Certainly. When that speech causes actual damage, you know, they always talk about that, the phrase, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, you can, actually. You have that right. And if everyone turns around and looks at you and laughs, then there was no harm and no foul. If, on the other hand, everyone panics and your speech causes actual injury to individuals, people get stampeded, they get injured trying to get out of the theater because they believe it's on fire. The manager, the owner of the theater, loses revenue. He gets sued because people were injured in his theater. Well, then you have a responsibility. And under the law, that's called a liability. Just because you have the right to do something doesn't mean that you have the right to be free from the consequences of exercising that right in poor judgment or with malicious intent. That's one of the elements of committing a crime, is intent. So if you intended to hurt someone with your thoughts, well, now we're getting closer, but have you actually caused injury? In the law, there has to be injury in fact. It can't be a presumed injury. It can't be an injury that is not measurable. You know, one of the gray areas is that psychological injury. Oh, it caused me psychological stress. Well, how in the heck do you measure something like that? It may well be that you were stressed, but that's very difficult to measure. Very difficult to put a compensation amount on that. And it's also very, very difficult to tell whether or not you're sincere. But actual injury to person or property is another thing entirely. We have laws for that. We don't need the myriad of laws that Congress has passed over the last 235 years. Number one, the central government was not created to govern over the individuals in the United States of America. It just wasn't. The states were there for that. That was the purpose of the states, to govern their sovereign territory, the states. And who comprises the state but the very people that live there? So it's the state's job to govern the people, not the federal government, not Congress and Assembly. The whole purpose of electing a Congress and a president and a Supreme Court was to provide legislation over the states to make sure that it was a level playing field from state to state to state. Taxes were supposed to be uniform, the excise taxes, consumption taxes, and commerce. We wanted to regulate that commerce and make sure that one state wasn't charging a fee to import goods from another state, and so on and so forth. Pretty straightforward stuff. It's not terribly complicated when you get right down to it. But the main reason that the federal government was created was to protect the individual. Protect them from what? Well, protect them from invasion of hostile armies, and to protect them from their own state government or the government of another neighboring state. That was the purpose. Not all this garbage we have now. Jefferson knew what would happen. He knew what the result would be. And how did they know what these results would be? They'd already seen it. They'd seen it play out time and time again. They knew their history. They knew what happened in Rome. They knew what happened in England. They knew what happened in France and Spain and Germany. They weren't fools. They were able to go through bit by bit of history and reason out pragmatically, logically, where the shortcomings were, what caused these problems, what caused these uprisings, these undulations. And what they discovered was what created these undulations, these problems, to use a phrase that you're probably familiar with of late, these bubbles that were created by governments. Governments having too much power and running roughshod over the citizens. So they said, okay, if we're going to have a central government, then we need to formulate it in such a way that it's very limited and it doesn't get this kind of power so that it doesn't create this government bubble. And every time those bubbles burst, it leads to war. We have a caller on the line. I believe that's Miss Linda. How are you, young lady?
Fine, sir. How are you?
I am wonderful.
Yeah.
Aggravated as ever, but...
Oh, yeah. Oh, please. When you send me all that stuff about the Rothschilds and the Pope and everything, then I can't sleep for 2 days.
I apologize.
So it's like, oh, my God. Well, I guess my main question would be, you know, when you... what you're speaking about, the bursting bubbles and all this stuff, which kind of was leading into that whole part of that pickle. Let's say in a perfect world, you and I got to run this mess. What would you do? What would be the first thing you would want to do to fix it?
Well, you know, as Bush said, if I were, it'd be easy if I were the dictator.
Well, I'm not advocating Mussolini or any of that. I mean, just, what steps could you really, really take, you know, provided you and I won the Revolutionary War of late?
Well, I honestly and earnestly believe that the very first thing that would need to happen is we would need to get together some of the brightest and best economic minds. I'm not talking about any damned Keynesians.
No. People like Robert Kiyosaki, yeah, I know.
Yeah, and formulate a program to introduce competing currency. I think Ron Paul had it right.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just pull the rug out from under the Fed system because it would leave a vacuum, and that's not going to be a good thing.
Yeah, that won't work, yeah.
It would leave a big void. So can you
wean it out step by step?
Well, okay. You give the let the people decide what they want.
Absolutely. Well, there
introduce,
you go.
You know, get rid of the legal tender laws and introduce competing currency where the states can have state-run banks that print their own currency just like they did before. Trust me, it's not a perfect system, but if they obey the Constitution, i.e. no state can make anything but gold or silver a legal tender. So any state bank currency issues would have to be backed up by gold and silver. I think that's a first step.
And then what about, because they did repeal the 18th Amendment because it was stupid, can we repeal the other one? I mean, that's
I think that would... That is a yeoman's task for certain. I think the 14th should be repealed. I think the 16th and 17th Amendment should be repealed. There's a lot of things that I would do in trying to get legislation off the books. And the first and foremost would be to start just defunding a lot of the programs.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. They should dry
so
up
much
like...
Place. Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is left to the executive branch, to the president's whim, you know?
And this UN nonsense, we don't need any, no, because all they want to do is take over, like, global, you know.
Oh, exactly.
Dictators.
I mean, that would be the first thing that would probably be the first thing that I announce. That would probably be the first thing that I announce is that we are officially removing ourselves from our UN charter, and the United Nations and their diplomats are welcome to come meet in New York on U.S. soil. However, there will be no diplomatic immunity for anyone. If you violate our laws, your butt's going to jail. And you'll be treated no differently than anybody else in the country. And that would be another thing, that all the laws would apply equally to everyone, not just a select few.
Right. And then we got to dry up the EPA and the NEA and the, you know,
well,
all the
sure.
rest of them.
And, you know, what I was talking about last night, if you stop and think about it, and I haven't done the math, but I can, that's a project I could take on. If you brought home, not even all, but the majority of our troops that are stationed on the various bases around the world, brought them home and stationed them at bases here in the United States of America, where they belong. That's how you defend a country. The influx of capital as a result of that would be a shot in the arm for all the local economies in the various states where all these military bases are located. Now, we can't rely on that forever, okay? But it would be a quick boost to get things rolling, and I think it would be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, there's so much that can be done, you know, and it's sad. I'm on my way to a meeting, as you probably read. They asked me to speak in front of the group at the Tea Party meeting in Vista because they know that I'm doing something tomorrow. I've got to be at the council chambers again for one of those, we think, predetermined Delphi-type workshop meeting on the circulation element. And I'm gathering up not only people, but information and handouts. I mean, I'm getting stuff from Tom DeWeese and all over the place, you know, just tons of stuff. And a lot of it comes from you guys, too, on the Internet. It's just amazing. But, you know, it's just got to be done. I have to take a stand and say, no, we're not doing this. And here's why, you know, kind of where I'm at.
Sure.
So I don't even know what I'm going to say tonight, except I'm going to beg them to come hang out with me in the chambers tomorrow. Because the more people that I have saying the same thing with, you know, people who have done their homework and sound articulate, I think the better chance. Because, see, Wednesday the 20th, that city council in Oceanside is going to vote on this circulation element. And so the more people we can get, you know, saying no and why and disrupting it and disrupting their Delphi techniques, I think the better chance we have.
Absolutely. Well, so, you know, I think it's becoming more and more obvious to more people, and they may not get the whole concept of things. And, you know, quite honestly, I think the larger, the bigger picture, the big picture, I guess, is not necessarily Agenda 21 and all these other things, while they are infinitely important.
Right.
People don't need to understand any of that. They don't need to understand the Fed or anything.
Right.
All they need to understand is that, look, guys, we've been trying it this way.
I know.
Since Abraham Lincoln. How do you like the results thus far?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you think it's going? Do you think maybe it's time we go back and try it the way it was prior to Lincoln getting into office? When we actually had a constitutional republic? When we had a government and a court that actually respected our laws and didn't try to twist them into reading them to be something other than what they clearly say in plain English?
Well, the thing that I'm trying to get people to understand is the huge nefariousness of people like Maurice Strong and Lisa Jackson and the rest of them, because they, you know, Ron, they do want to off 240 million Americans if they could. Are you kidding me? If they could do it tomorrow, they'd do it.
Absolutely.
And people they need to know this.
They've got an agenda, and they've got the platform to do it. And, you know, Robert called me before I went on the air to tell me that he was doing some exams and he wouldn't be able to call in tonight. But he was telling me he was sitting when he was down in Miami with Leani, I'm sorry. They were watching a show on the History Channel, and they were showing a speech by George H.W. Bush before he got the presidency. Long before he got the presidency.
Oh, wow.
And he was stunned because in this documentary, they showed Bush giving a speech, and Bush was beaming about China and how China was the answer to the future.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He's a globalist. He always has been.
When I told Rob, I said, you know, of course, if you follow the Agenda 21 and the whole thing, you understand that it's been said more than once. Hillary Clinton said it right out of her own mouth that China is the model.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. And the one-child policy, I mean, that's been battered about for forever with these progressives. And all of it goes way back to, you know, the dude that was the playwright, and George Bernard Shaw, Margaret Sanger, Woodrow Wilson. I mean, it goes further back than that. But, I mean, especially when the 1900s hit, it was just on fire, the little rap. And they've had all this time.
And they use this fallacy. And I think people need to make sure that they're aware of it. And I'm seeing more and more talk about it recently than I have in quite a while, and that is population, overpopulation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is all part of it.
Is
huge.
Make no mistake about it. It's not population that they want to control. Well, it is. But it's not overpopulation that they're concerned with. You know, George Herbert Walker, G.H.W. Bush's grandfather, was big into eugenics. And the idea that was born, that gave birth to, pardon the pun, Planned Parenthood, was the Eugenics Society. And they weren't out to control how many people were born. They weren't concerned with population control. What they were concerned with is too many brown people or too many black people or too many stupid people being born.
Right.
Defective humans.
Adolf, doesn't it?
Exactly. They believe that you breed humans just like you breed horses.
Oh, yeah, and they think that they can have a superior species. That sounds faintly familiar in the 30s, I believe, in Germany, wasn't it? The superior race. Yeah, they're all cut from the same cloth.
Well, their ideology of this superior race is a superior worker, a superior athlete.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Because they're going to be serfs.
Exactly. Bingo.
Yeah.
Because, it's just like the plantation owners used to breed the slaves because they wanted...
Sure.
Bigger, stronger, harder workers. It's no different.
Yep.
It's the same plan. But they want something else. They want them to be docile and servile.
Unbelievable. Well, you know, I have some more documentation, which I just received on the internet, which I'm probably going to read today and tomorrow. And out of their own mouths from UN Agenda 21, whether it was 20 years ago or the ones coming up today, is they're talking about not just the population control, but, I had it a second ago, just too much on my mind lately. But they're spelling out all of the evil, you know, that their plans are about.
They're becoming more bold.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. And so once I get a hold of it, I'll type it into the Patriot Family chat room, and you guys, you know, or I can maybe put a blog up there of what went down tonight and stuff. It's just amazing what they're talking about. It's horrible. They absolutely want to control the people.
On a slightly different note, I don't know if you've been able to listen to Mike Church yet.
Oh, no, not yet.
I'm telling you, I was in stitches this morning. He played the announcement from Obama in the Rose Garden, and there was a bird chirping. And, of course, I know everyone's done some kind of a parody on the bird chirping in the background. He said they tried to get an interview with the bird, but it seems that Obama had the CIA or the Secret Service off the bird for heckling the president.
Yeah, that's part of the H.R. 347, I'm sure.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I laughed so hard. I couldn't stand it.
Oh, have you seen him? I think there was two or three different instances with different reporters, and he got really testy with them because he doesn't like to be questioned because he thinks he's a dictator, and you can spell that any way you want already. I'm sorry, but I don't know how you don't hate this guy.
He's so Lincoln-esque.
It's just, well, yeah, but he wants to be this imperial, you know,
right,
comrade. It's just disgusting.
But he hasn't had any of the reporters arrested and put in military prison that we know of. And I don't believe he's had any congressmen deported yet. But
no, because
give it time.
They don't really do anything against him. They don't say anything. They just dance around it. It's theater.
Give him another 4 years and we might well see that come to fruition.
Oh, please, God, don't let us. Please, don't wish that on me. I mean, I think it would be great to be in heaven next to Jesus, but I don't think I'm ready yet. Oh, God, please.
I was reading a great article earlier from a Christian pastor, and he said, why I cannot vote for Mitt Romney.
Oh, gosh.
And he went on to explain, you know, the very same issues that he had with Barack Obama, and the idea of voting for the lesser of two evils is just not something that's compatible with his Christian faith and his personal principles. He said that would make me nothing more than a hypocrite to now turn and say, oh, well, let me explain why I'm going to vote for Mitt Romney. He can't do it, and I agree with him. And, you know, it's just a shame that more Americans weren't more principled.
I know. Well, you know, the sad thing is, I've seen this movie before. This is McCain versus Obama in 08. This is exactly what we have. This is a very thick Hollywood rerun, wouldn't you say?
Almost, but I think this one's going to have a different outcome.
You think Mitt Witt's gonna take it? I hope so.
I think Mitt's the guy, but I don't think that's any better.
I know, but at least if somebody stands up against him, they won't be called a damned racist. Maybe that's what they're doing. I think that's the only thing that's, unless they're getting death threats. I don't know what the heck. I don't know what to think about these Quislings and the cowards. I just don't understand it. Well, we've got to take the Senate and the House too. Not that that'll help, because they're so incompetent. I've never seen anything like this.
Well, I just don't see, you know, Mitt Romney coming in and doing anything. Oh, I think the market will get a boost. I think you'll see people.
He's going to stay on the same trajectory. He just might put the brakes on a little bit, but that's all. And he may not put his chin in the air and act like a complete ass. But, you know, that's about it. I agree. I mean, I would love to see Ron Paul, but, you know, I don't know if he's got a chance.
Well,
I love
you
the
know,
guy.
I don't know either. And I still think that maybe he's playing a tad bit coy. Because even the last time around, even at, all the way up to the convention, you know, he had not conceded anything. And I have not heard him with his own mouth concede anything.
Wow.
You know, I've seen some things that might hint around the edges of that, but I've not heard any concession.
Yeah, I haven't either.
And I'm not naive enough to think that Ron Paul is going to walk into the convention and take the whole thing and we're all going to have a party in the streets. I don't think that's going to happen. But at least we've got enough people. There's a large enough contingent of Ron Paul supporters out there that it does give me some encouragement. And I think that if you were to start the political campaign today, the presidential campaign
right
today versus
I know
6 months ago. I think Ron Paul would be looking a hell of a lot more attractive than he did at the outset for
right.
the average person.
Sure.
Not folks that have been in it and been, you know, Paul supporters for a while.
Right. Well, I don't know what, you know, what's going to happen. I just know that I'm preparing like crazy for whatever happens, you know. And I think just everybody pray a lot. That's all we can do. Because I can't even fathom 4 more years of this guy. I just can't.
Well, at least the new Obama will be a white guy, you know. That way us racist patriots, we'll feel better. We'll feel much better about being under the thumb of the man if it's a white man instead of a black man. That's the mantra that the progressive idiots want to push.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the Bill Maher's and Janine Garofalo's of the world.
How many does Bill Maher have? About 4? I don't even know if anyone listens to that guy anymore. Oh, my Lord. Unbelievable. Yeah, the things that come out of these people's mouths. And it's weird because you can tell they're brainwashed because of how they speak. It's like they're all little clones of each other. They have no original thoughts. And it's just, oh, my Lord. They all have the same teleprompter. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, we were talking about last night, illegal immigration. It blows me away that they totally sidestep the central problem with the argument,
right.
Okay? And they bring out all these sob stories and everything, and it's like you're missing the point. If we were enforcing our immigration laws, none of these stories would exist because this wouldn't happen.
Well, yeah, and somebody did say it, and I can't remember who it was, on the immigration issue, and I think it was on the radio today on one of my local stations, talking about if you cut off the money supply, they will self-support. You won't have the problem.
My
they
God.
Won't come across the border.
Ron Paul said that for how long?
Remove
the incentive, and they will go elsewhere.
It's an open vault for these people, and they know it. And
yeah,
it's been going on for 30-plus years.
And it's my damn wallet they're prying into. You know, I just... I talked to my accountant. We filed an extension for our 2011 taxes, and I've got to pay another $5,300 to the federal government for 2011, and I'm furious.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! Yeah, it's horrible. Well, I've said this one before, and they have the statistics that we've got people here working on the illegal immigration problem, and they've come out with all these California statistics. It's per year, the taxpayers in California put the bill for these illegals for all their services and welfare and food stamps and education and health care to the tune of $21 billion. Now, why do you think we're broke? Gee, many gods.
Well, that's just it. They're being so charitable with everybody else's money that we're broke. They can't.
Yeah.
Not even the progressives can bear to look the American people in the face and say, we're going to steal more of your money.
Oh, God. Well, they're trying in California, but the voters are wise to this now. Finally,
sure,
God,
that's why they have that's why they have a Federal Reserve system, so
yep.
that they don't have to go to the taxpayers and steal more of their money right out of their pocketbook, right
yeah,
out of their paycheck.
They just hire Ickley and they get all the grants.
Well, they can steal it over a longer period of time through
yeah.
what Ron Paul talks about, the hidden tax, which is inflating the money supply, which impacts the poorest among us the hardest, okay?
Sure.
And as Bill said, it's a war of attrition.
Well, you know, there's going to come a time when things are going to melt down and people will even get more wise, and that's not going to be a fun time. But, you know, what they're doing, because now that I'm learning about the local governments, because I'm hearing this stuff right out of city council's mouths, is all this is about grant money and federal money. This is what they're doing. They're pandering to these guys, and they're going, oh, if we hire Ickley and we do this and we put stupid roundabouts in our streets and, you know, destroy everything, we'll get all this money. I'm about to blow that one out of the water tomorrow, let me tell
right.
you.
Say, guys, you know, our federal government is $15.3 trillion in debt. Where in the hell is this money magically appearing from?
Oh, it's just, it's sick. You know, and then they're going to implement this draconian, you know, futuristic utopia, which will be a nightmare. You know what I'm saying? This is what I have to get across to these people.
Well, see, that's what the whole point is, to make everyone debt slaves. You know, I was watching a report tonight on Greece, and they had, I can't remember, not Dylan Radigan. He's one of the guys on the Fox Business show. Anyway, they had a guy on. He's an American, but he's a reporter for BBC, and he was talking about what happened in Greece, and it was AIG that was doing these currency swaps for Greece. What they would do is and you're talking billions of euros, right? So they would buy a bunch of euros from Greece, do a currency swap, and then trade them back to them to make Greece's economy look better than it actually was. Now, according to the books at AIG and Goldman Sachs, they were taking billions in losses. No company's going to do that.
Unbelievable stuff. I know.
They're the ones that perpetrated this whole mess over in the Eurozone with these currency swaps. And this is just another one of those derivatives trades that is completely unregulated. And,
wow.
So, as they pointed out, who's being punished? The victim
yes.
of the crime is being punished. He said, you know, the media is trying to portray the Greek people as folks who retire at the age of 23 and, you know, they can't work more than 30 minutes at a job without a union break and so on and so forth. And he said, that's just nonsense. Fact of the matter is they've been raped and pillaged by an American banking corporation. And with the assistance and collusion of their own government, the very government mm-hmm. that was supposed to be representing them.
Of course.
And they're not in jail, and they should be.
It's horrible, Ron. Look what's going on here, because they have been, for how many decades, adopting these European-style notions over here. It's been going on since before the 19th, you know, the 20th century dawned on us. And it's just... And now that it's got a huge toehold, they're like 20
you know
to 30 years ahead of us, and we're just now finding out about this stuff, and I'm livid. I'm just livid.
Well, and you know, even the Europeans are getting pissed over it, you know?
Yeah, I know Germany's not happy.
And I'm telling you, that's what I was going to say. I'm telling you right now that the target is Germany.
Wow.
That's the target.
Dang.
The target is Germany and France. And I say that because they go after the little guys. Greece is easy. They have an economy the size of Dallas, Texas.
Great. Yeah.
Okay? So it's easy to manipulate, just like they did with Iceland. And what happens, because Germany and the rest are in the European Union, it's going to bring Germany down.
Oh, my gosh.
Germany is the one shining city on the hill, if you will, over in the Eurozone.
Right.
They're productive. Well,
mm-hmm.
the Germans aren't going to stand for a direct frontal attack on their country or their currency. They're too smart for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to play to their charitable goodwill.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're going to bankrupt them through trying to prop up all these failed nation states within the Eurozone, and they've failed on purpose. They have purposely failed them.
It's so criminal. I know. I mean, they do it like when I listen to Terry Rowland on her show, she goes through this every day, because the education system on a, you know, like a microcosmic level is exactly what they've been doing. They keep just tossing, you know, printed money into this broken system, and they play on the, you know, the charitable heartstrings. Oh, the kids and the teachers. Oh, you know, I mean, this is what they do. This is how the progressives try to sell their wares. And it's I'm tired of it. I'm seeing through it, and I'm tired of it.
In the military, there's a name for it. It's a PSYOP. It's a psychological operation.
Yep. And they've been doing it for so long. I remember what it was. They the people who perpetrated this back in the Rio Summit 20 years ago, they said, well, we needed a common thread, and we needed a common cause, and we've come up with it. We're going to use the environment and the planet, and we're going to sell it. And then, you know, this is
sure.
how we're... How, and this is what... And so they created the hoax out of whole cloth, and they've been doing it for eons. And this is something that the people at the city council and the workshop tomorrow, they must be made aware of this stuff. And if that's my job, then that's my job.
You know, so, it goes back to something that I've posted it in the chat several times, and it is something that's called diapraxis.
Yes.
It's a psychological warfare. You know,
mm-hmm.
Alex Jones, for all of his shortcomings, the reason that it's called InfoWars is, just as he says, there's a war on for your mind.
Exactly.
And it absolutely is. And it is the Hegelian dialectic, this diaprax crap.
Mm-hmm.
It's pure psychology.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to me, pure propaganda, and it was quite effective during the Bolshevik Revolution and also naturally with Goebbels and Hitler and the rest of them. They used it quite well, and they learned a lot of it from our people. Edward Bernays was brilliant. He look what he did just in advertising alone. And
yep.
everybody's, I mean, it's like the Kool-Aid drinking started there, you know, and it's been going downhill pretty fast ever since. But, yeah, it's sad that we don't have an educated populace.
I'm posting a link to the short, I don't know what your thesis or essay on the dialectic and praxis.
Mm-hmm.
And the link is professionalserve.com/diaprax. When you
mm-hmm.
open that page up, you'll see, you know, a blue page, and it'll say Volume 1, Number 1, 1996. And above that, on the left side of the page, you'll see title page to page 5. And if you just click on those links, that'll take you to the very first page. You read through it. When you're done, you can, you know, it takes you through the first 5 pages. Then you go pages 6 through 11. There's links up there. Read through the whole thing. It's only 52 pages long. It doesn't take long to read through. But once you read through that, you will recognize in
mm-hmm.
there, when you read it, you will recognize things and go, I've done that.
Yeah.
I've had that done to me. You know, you were talking about the Delphi technique.
Oh, my God.
When you read it, it dawns on you. It's like, those SOBs, they did that to me. And you...
Yep.
You realize where your thought process goes kind of off the rails.
Sure. And what they're doing is they're swaying us with this dialectic, you know, dialogue. And they're good at what they do. I mean, we got to stay on our toes 24/7, I think, you know, and put up the shield of truth against it and have that critical thinking. And just, my God, that's why I've been reading like a little banshee, trying to absorb it all, you know, to try to figure it out and turning back to God and going. And in fact, I need to go get a Geneva Bible so that I can get rid of the King James Version. Oy.
Ah, man, I'm telling you, I think a Tinsdale, I've never had a, and I'll probably get the, I'm sure there's an online version. Tinsdale was the first one to print a reformist Bible, you know, outside of the church. So, you know, I don't know if there's any more insight in it through Tinsdale's translation of the scriptures or not. There's so many different translations. If you really want to get disillusioned about the Bible, and, you know, you hear people say, well, that's your interpretation. Well, You know, that's a pretty accurate statement because which version are you reading?
Exactly.
I've seen different
pastors reading different scriptures, and I'm trying to follow along in mine, and I'm going, gee, that word's not there, and this one's changed, and that's, you know, some are just nuances, but, you know, and I'm not a scholar because I don't know Hebrew, Greek, or any of it, or ancient Aramaic, but, you know, that's something
there are entire scriptures completely missing.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
And my sister and I went through this because there was a website that I used to go to, and it had, excuse me, it had a collection of all the various versions,
mm-hmm.
and a list of all the scriptures that were missing. And it's one of those things that you wouldn't really notice, especially the way the Bible is laid out, because the verses kind of run together. You wouldn't notice that you went from verse 31 to verse 33.
Right.
You know,
oh.
you wouldn't notice that you missed 32 entirely. It wasn't there. What did it say? Why isn't it there?
Exactly. Yeah, it's crazy. So none of our lovely people in the chat room are calling in, I see.
No, that's okay.
Encourage them.
Well, you know, sometimes everyone is content just to sit and listen to me ramble on. I don't know why.
It's your radio voice. We keep telling you.
I know I can't be that entertaining.
Sometimes, yeah, you are.
I can get in those little moods now and then, yes.
And then when Robert calls in, it's really a blast. Oh, he is so funny, and you guys together.
I just love giving him a hard time. He's a sweetheart of a guy.
Yeah, he's a really nice person.
He really is, and he gets so riled up. He's a very interesting and eclectic personality. And I really enjoy the time that I've been able to spend with Robert, and I always enjoy our little exchanges.
Sure. So I'm getting ready to walk into the meeting. I'm hoping you have a really wonderful rest of the show. And, say hello to everybody in the chat room out there and encourage your buddies in there to call in.
Absolutely, hon. And you knock them dead in there. I have no
doubt. Thank you. I'm going to try.
I have no doubt that you're going to stand up there and just spew it right out from the heart and knock them over.
Thank you. You guys, God bless. And I'll catch you guys tomorrow on Bill and Hollis' show.
God bless, Linda. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, everybody. And, of course, that was our own lovely Miss Linda Sills, who does her show on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. here, right from the left coast. And I know she'll do a wonderful job in that meeting. Linda is certainly not a shrinking violet. And she's certainly able to articulate herself quite well. So I have full faith that she'll be able to go in there and lay some smack down on those folks and maybe get some attention, get their attention, get them thinking about things. That's really what has to happen. And, you know, we need to be focusing on our local governments, our city councils, our county board, and our state legislators. And exactly what Linda was talking about is she's delving deeper and deeper into this Agenda 21 and all these programs and projects. The allure to all of these city managers and city councilmen and state legislators is that federal government money and the prestige that comes with being able to dip your hand into the honeypot. We need to start holding these people accountable. While everyone's pointing the finger at Washington, D.C., and certainly a large portion of the problem is at the head of the beast, no doubt. But who is the whore that's riding on the beast if it's not the states and the state governments and the local governments? They are the whore Babylon that's riding on the beast. So we need to make sure that we start putting pressure on locally to do away with these programs. You know, just because the federal government sends money to Woodstock, Georgia for some T-Splost project, that doesn't mean that I'm off the hook from paying for it when it comes time to pay my federal taxes, or that my grandson or my future great-grandson or great-granddaughter aren't going to be on the hook for those benevolent gifts from on high in Washington, D.C. We're smarter than that. We know that. So we need to convince our legislators to stop playing this game of Russian roulette with our tax dollars. Because sooner or later, folks, let's face it, we're going to run out of the ability to continue paying. When that happens, we'll just go to a cashless society and we'll have government credits issued to us whenever we go to work. And the government will own everything, not that they don't already. So we better start paying attention. I know you guys are. That's why you're here. But we need to spread the word. We need to let everyone know. And Mr. Tim Roper, thank you for your vote of confidence. I wouldn't take that job if I had to, but I suppose if I was given the job, I would take it. Tim posted in the chat room, Radio Ron for president. It would be an insurmountable task, to say the least. But I certainly would try. And I would try to restore this country back to what it's supposed to be. What it was originally intended to be. And I'm sure many of the state governments would scream bloody murder if they weren't getting their government funds. But that's the problem. All the states are on corporate welfare. They're on the welfare program. They're getting food stamps. They're getting a welfare check straight from their good old Uncle Sam. And they don't mind that Uncle Sam is beating up his nieces and nephews to steal the money out of their damn piggy banks to give them that money. They'll turn a blind eye to whence the money comes from. We've got to stop. It has to stop. And it's pretty clear that they're not going to stop on their own. They need some encouragement from us, the people that put them in office, the people that pay their salary. Perhaps if we stopped paying their salaries, they'd get the message. But something tells me they would simply rally their troops and send them out to roust you out of your home and steal whatever cash they could get their hands on, along with all your property. Why would they do such a thing? Because they have zero respect for you or your property. They don't believe you have the right to anything, especially if the government covets what you have. And believe me, they do. It's absolute insanity. And the only end in sight is a crash landing. Guys, we've talked about this. I don't believe that the next election cycle is going to make 2 cents worth of difference in the outcome, in the long run, in the big picture. It's just not. It doesn't matter if it crashes under a Mitt Romney or a Barack Obama or a Ron Paul, for that matter. It really doesn't. What does matter is if you're prepared, if you're ready, that you're not caught off guard, that you and your family aren't left out in the cold. So despite all of our best hopes and prayers for a change, for a revival, a restoration, a revolution, or whatever else you might want to call it, we still have to plan for it. We have to plan for the worst. the absolute worst. And I'm not sure a lot of folks out there even understand what that looks like. I'm not sure that I understand what it looks like. And I've been in some pretty bad situations over the years. But nothing like what we're talking about. Nothing. None of us have. I don't think it's going to be pretty. In fact, I'm certain it's going to be pretty doggone ugly. You think people are, there's a lot of tension now? You think people are angry now and short-tempered and snappy at one another? Oh, wait till things really go bad in earnest. I mean, honestly, it's not that bad right now. My air conditioner still works. You know, I've got air conditioning, got electricity. I can get on here and do this radio show. I can go pay groceries, buy groceries, put gas in my car. I can go back and forth to work every day. I can do all the things that we associate with a normal life. When all that comes crashing down and none of that is available anymore, not even a viable option, that's when you're going to have to look around and take an assessment of your situation and determine what the best actions are. I know there's people that have all kinds of plans. They got bug out plans. They got a bag. They got this. They got that. You don't know what it's going to look like. You're not going to carry 2,000 pounds worth of freeze-dried food with you. You're not going to carry 5,000 rounds of ammunition with you. I got a 308 rifle, and I can tell you right now that an ammo can, just a standard military ammo can full of 308, is mighty damned heavy. I don't know when, but I do know that we're headed for the wall. And you're absolutely right, Bill. The UN is in control. Whether it's Romney or Obama, it just doesn't matter. You know, they're talking about all these different taxes, letting the United Nations tax American citizens. Believe me, it will be an end around tax. Your federal government will institute it, but the money will be funneled directly to the United Nations. Whether you're aware of it or not, really doesn't matter. It's inconsequential. As Dr. Paul said, all funds are fungible. I know, Bill. I beat my head against the wall every day trying to figure out why people can't see the truth. They can know all these things. They can know all the bad stuff that's going on, all the terrible plans, the Agenda 21 and the whole thing. They know it all. But they can't bring themselves to support somebody like a Ron Paul. And I just don't understand the logic behind that or the lack thereof. I just don't get it. But how do you get blinded by the mainstream media and their propaganda if you know all the other stuff? That's what gets me. Kyra, that's the whole isolation thing is, first of all, that's a big topic. Isolationism is not what put us in World War II, okay? And Dr. Paul's not an isolationist. That is a Sean Hannity talking point. If you want to talk about an isolationist, look at what we have in the White House right now. Look at the current administration. When your government is doling out billions and billions of dollars in federal funds to countries around the world and threatens one country if they don't capitulate and fall in line with what the government wants, they're going to isolate them from the rest of the world by not giving them funds or they're going to cut off their funds. They're going to put sanctions on them. That's isolationist. And I'm not trying to be condescending. I'm not trying to be a wise guy. But isolationism is not what put us into World War II. What started World War II for us, the United States of America, was Pearl Harbor. And Franklin Roosevelt did everything he possibly could to entice the Japanese to attack us. That's a whole nother story. But the Bush family, they weren't being isolationist when they were funding Hitler and his rise to power through a guy named Fritz Thyssen. And the point is, we can sit and rationalize all the reasons why we just can't bring ourselves to vote for this guy, Ron Paul. But here's the problem with that. How about all the reasons we can't vote for the guy that's in office, or all the reasons we can't vote for Mitt Romney? Which stack is bigger? Which stack is more problematic? Romney wouldn't know the truth if it kicked him square in the testicles. And I don't believe Barack Obama would either. They're both consummate liars. Romney has been the biggest flip-flop I've ever seen. He makes John McCain look like a straight-laced arrow. What about Newt Gingrich? Well, he's a progressive and always has been. He's an intellectual. And he passes himself off as an intellectual. He is a very smart man, but he's a progressive. What about Rick Santorum? He's a hothead and an extremist. And he doesn't believe that the government is secondary in authority to anyone. That's a problem for me. You see, when we boil down the big picture, the bigger picture, it really comes down to two sides. Whether it's Democrat or Republican, conservative or independent, liberal or libertarian, none of it matters. The one true test for a president should be this: does he believe in a constitutionally limited government restricted by the restraints of the Constitution, or does he believe in the current status quo? I've only seen one candidate, one, that believes in a constitutionally restricted federal government running for president. Only one. I've heard the word Constitution more in the last 8 years since the 2008 campaign until today. I've heard the word Constitution more times in that short span than I have the entire rest of my adult life and my childhood. But Kyra, that's what it actually comes down to, because what you have is two competing ideologies. One was Thomas Jefferson. Okay? Jefferson had an idea, and Alexander Hamilton had an opposing idea. And if you read our history, what you'll find is that for the most part, up until 1860, Jefferson's ideology won the day. It wasn't easy. He was under that ideology, that idea was under constant assail from the adversaries of the Hamiltonian side of things. They were constantly probing and pushing, finding any crack or weakness to advance their agenda. When Abraham Lincoln was elected to the presidency, Jeffersonianism died. And from 1861 until this very day, we have been living under the Hamiltonian school of government. There have been precious few inroads made into righting the ship of state in all that time. Very little. Ron Paul has been the single largest impact on the status quo system in over 100 years. For me, the choice is so stark and straightforward. It's either what we currently have, or worse, or the original intent, the original founding idea. It's really that cut and dried. And we could certainly sit and find all kinds of faults with every single individual running. But it's not about just the individual. It's about an idea. And it involves all of us. And it's whether we want to live under the idea of freedom, where the government is there to protect the rights of the individual, their right to property, their right to be left alone, or whether we want to promote a nanny state government that is crony capitalism, that is Marxism, fascism at its best. That's really, and I'm not, I hope you understand, Kyra, I don't know you well enough, but I'm not trying to scold you. I'm just trying to tell you that we've got to step back a minute. And so often we fall for the diaprax. That's why I posted that up there earlier. And if you didn't get that link, go back and get that link, because that is an essential read. It really is. And I promise you, if you read through that, you will see things in there that will make you go, dang it. And you'll know it. It'll be right there in your face. And you will recognize the tactics and things that have been done. And it's not something that's easy to overcome, because you've been indoctrinated to think that way your entire life, since you were born, without even knowing it. It's just natural. It's second nature. I still do it. And one of those things is when someone disagrees with you, like you were disagreeing with me, is to lash out and belittle the person that disagrees with you. But that doesn't make my position any stronger, and it makes you that much more resistant to what I have to say. But I promise you, for all of his faults, Ron Paul is, after all, human. He is, after all, human. He's the only man that stood on that stage out of all those candidates and consistently told you the truth every single time. He didn't stand up there and tell you what he thought you wanted to hear. Guys, it's been a great show. Want to thank everybody for tuning in. And want to remind everybody, we've got a great lineup of shows tomorrow night at 7. Right here will be Mr. Bill Strong and maybe Mr. Hollis Buchanan with Patriot Families Chat. Then on Wednesday night will be Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. Then on Thursday we'll have Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. Friday night at 8 is Brian with Mortgage Help. Saturday will be Mr. Michael Magic at 7 Eastern Time with Exposing the Illusion. And then yours truly will be back here Sunday for Fed Up Frank. So I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Kyra, God bless you. And God bless everybody. You know, and I really want to thank you guys for tuning in and listening to my diatribe. And I hope that everyone is able to gain a little something from the show, and I really appreciate your support. And show up and listen to the other programs, because it's important for the host to know that they've got an active audience who is interested in what they have to say and supportive of their efforts. So thanks, guys. Have a good night. God bless you, and we'll see y'all on the flip side. Bye-bye.